it's a process. I mean, obviously, we're trying to get better every day, and that's just part of the game.
I just like how close we all got. You know, you talking about going through OTAs. We get this little break, come back there in camp, and nothing changed. You know, everybody's still asking questions. Everybody's still trying to get close. Everybody's still trying to grant that fellowship, that brothership. And I feel like that's awesome. You know, you go on the first day, everybody's still working hard. Everybody's still trying to learn more, and I think that's the coolest part.
It's the start of a new beginning, a new season. Optimism, and you just grind every day to be the best you can be so it doesn't get old. You got to push through every single day.
I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be the real deal. I mean, I know it's so early, but just the way it comes out of his hands, the way he throws, accuracy.
As a football player, you're not going to always have your best day. And that's why we come out here and work each and every day. And I feel like it's better to have those days now than have them later in the season.
That's what leadership's about. And Urban's a good leader. I mean, you can dislike Urban all you want. And Urban is not for everyone. I get that. And that's fine. But you can't argue the fact that the guy is a leader. And he's had success as a leader.
1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, welcome in. It is the first Check the Tape Tuesday of the regular season here for 2021 on Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Jeff Lagerman, and E.T. Good morning.
Did you check it or just burn the tape?
Burn the tape Tuesday.
No. You watch it. I mean, you know, that's the one thing, good or bad, you got to watch everything and try to provide some answers, you know, and some information to people to maybe understand why. So, I mean, sometimes watching bad film, you know, I always say this, and that when you have a bad game, sometimes when you go to the film, it's never as bad as you thought. And then you have games that are really good and you go to watch the film and it's never as good as you thought.
Mm-hmm.
This one was right about par for the course.
You thought it'd be bad and it was?
Yeah. It wasn't terrible, but it certainly wasn't good. And I'll say this, I think the thing that probably was worse than watching the tape was the things that you saw before the tape actually starts recording.
Oh?
What I mean by that is, from an organizational standpoint, okay, you know, getting players on the field, trying to sub on defense, you're not getting lined up, you're having substitution issues. You're having the play come in late to the offense. You're having to burn timeouts. I mean, these are all things that, should be ready to go. The Texans had just as much change in the offseason, if not more distractions, and yet they seem to be a much smoother running operation than the Jaguars did on opening day. And that, to me, was very surprising.
Right? I mean, I think that might be the most surprising thing in the whole thing. Urban Meyer's so detail-oriented, right? And they look just discombobulated right from
the get-go.
They did.
Yeah, I mean, they did. It was sloppy. I mean, there's no other way to term it. I mean, you know, and if you're gonna be honest, I mean, that is always a reflection of coaching. And so you got out-coached and you got out-played. I mean, I don't think there's any two ways about that. So what do? I mean, you go back to work and you fix it. And I understand that, look, it's the first real game for a blended staff, which means you have some that have college experience and some that have pro experience. And so you're going to get some hiccups, and especially with a young quarterback. But, you know, you had the hiccups with the quarterback as far as the performance, but I don't think any of the hiccups were due to the quarterback as far as having to use the timeouts because of issues. It was more coming from the sideline than it was the quarterback not getting things proper in his head. Mm. I mean, that's the one thing. In fact, me and Tony Boselli were talking to Andre Ware, who is the Texans color analyst before the game, and he's a super guy. Does a lot of college football, and he knows what he's talking about.
Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah, and he played quarterback, and he gets it. And he was asking us about Trevor Lawrence, and you guys would probably agree with what we told him. We said, look, for a young quarterback to come in and to watch him in practice and to really not to see any of the confusion and, hey, you know, let's re-huddle again. We didn't get that right. And, you know, and timeouts and stuff like that in a preseason. I mean, we didn't see any management problems, did we, with Trevor Lawrence?
No.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was surprising. We were telling Andre, look, I mean, this guy's got – he gets it, you know, and we are really excited about seeing him play because it doesn't seem too big for him. He handles everything, no delayed games, no issues in preseason. And all of a sudden, I was looking at Andre at halftime and I'm going, dude, I'm sorry. I don't know where this came from.
Right? I mean, 14:06 left in the game. Or in the first quarter, and we're calling a timeout because can't get things lined up
properly.
Not good. Yeah.
Not good.
The interesting thing, Logs, on that in terms of the unflappable nature or the mental acuity or preparedness of Trevor Lawrence, after the game, you know, he does make you – it makes me feel better. I shouldn't speak for anyone else. I've heard others say that, though, that, like, you listen to him and he's so grounded and you believe that he knows what he needs to do to improve and you have faith when you hear him speak.
I know where you're going here.
Where Tyrann Mathieu, right, like, watched it and said, man, this guy gets it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't worry about Trevor Lawrence. And I thought that was really interesting to have a veteran in the league express that about a rookie who has no particular connection to. You know, I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, and that's probably the first thing that Mathieu actually saw of Trevor Lawrence as far as from a getting up in front of the media and talking.
Sure.
And we've been seeing it
right
preseason. And so it's not surprising to us, but okay, now he lost a real game and it's his first regular season loss maybe since like playing Pee Wee or something. I mean, he didn't lose in high school regular season game.
Didn't lose in college.
In a regular season game, and he gets up to the podium. And I mean, it was what he said was dead on the money. And so, I mean, that I think is also. I mean, on top of you saw some throws that he makes and in the way he manages the pocket that make you go, man, this guy, he's got something. And some of the throws that he makes, and yeah, he had interceptions and he had some bad throws. But, I mean, some of the throws that he made, you go, wow. And then you watch and listen to him in the post game and you go, guy gets it. You know, this guy is so much more mature beyond his years that's a really positive sign.
I thought one cool thing, the Jags tweeted out a reverse angle video of the touchdown to Chark. And when you watch it, like, in real time from the regular angle, you're like, oh, that's a really nice throw.
It's a great throw.
The reverse angle, you're like, that ball's coming in there. It is so freaking tight. And, it almost looked like when he first threw it, it had a little bit of arc in it, but – when you see it on the coming in from Chark's perspective, it's like, holy cow, was that a good throw?
I mean, great, hell of a throw.
Yeah.
That's a big-time throw, and the safety. You know that there's a tight window. So, I mean, outstanding throw, and to be honest with you, that play should have never have happened. It should have been called back.
Oh?
It should have been negated. Illegal formation.
Oh. Maybe
I thought we had enough of that, Jeff.
We lulled them to sleep on that one, Tony.
Telling you.
Maybe the refs are like, you know, maybe this is legal because they keep doing it over and over and over again.
The play should have been negated. You had two wide receivers on that side, which was DJ, and I believe it was LaVisca on that play. They're on the line of scrimmage.
Oh, yeah. One's got to be back off. And,
that's right.
How?
I don't know.
Look, I get it. There's so many, like.
When you watch the All-22, watch it again.
Oh, my
and
God.
Look at that.
Right? But, like, that one, like, I mean,
like,
you've
got to
know that as LaVisca Chenault, right? I'm assuming he should have been the one or one of them.
I mean,
guys.
One of them. I mean,
right, you've got to know.
Take a look,
like, I know you're young players in the league, but that's like a football thing.
I mean, it's like coming in here and sitting down, having another guy come in, right?
Yeah.
Okay, there's three of us.
Yeah.
There's four seats. There's four microphones. It's like somebody coming in and wanting to sit in our lap.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an extra
right,
sheet
like,
right
sit right there.
There,
right.
It's been a penalty since you started playing football
exactly.
in pads.
Right, right.
Like, it's not a penalty in high school.
It's not a new thing because you're in the NFL.
No.
The illegal formation penalties were a little bothersome, and they could have been called for it numerous other times. You know, the old formation or offensive line formation that you try to get away with and for years, and teams always still try to push the envelope a little bit. You're trying to get your tackles back off the line of scrimmage to negate some of the speed rushers. I mean, this looked like airplane wings. I mean, you know, Cam and Taylor were way back off the ball, and I mean, they were just as deep as the slot receiver that was lined up off the ball. And so the guy on the line of scrimmage looked like he was the head of the tackle wasn't even touching the wide receiver at times that was on the line of scrimmage. So I mean, it's something that certainly has got to get cleaned up. But I mean, look. It happened throughout the game, and it could have been called more. And then on that touchdown to DJ, I was watching the film. And during live, I didn't see that because, you know, you're looking at formation.
Sure.
And other things. You're not really focusing in on some of the details. But you go back and watch the film, I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Well, we will take a deeper dive into the offensive line. In fact, we'll start there when we come back after the first time out here. But you are welcome, as always, on a Check the Tape Tuesday to get in with your thoughts and questions for Jeff Lagerman here. Hit us up on the phone lines at 641-1010. Same for the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosures. And that is always our question of the day on these Check the Tape Tuesdays. We solicit your questions for Jeff Lagerman. And you can hit us up on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs56, that's LOGS56, and at IME2. The T.
Come on, somebody.
All right, there he goes. He's back a little bit.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
It's a Tuesday. It's a ramp up. He was so – they had taken so much out of him, Logs, yesterday. I'd never seen it happen before. He didn't even put together an open for the show. He just like, here's Mike and Tony
go.
And David Garrard, go. And it was – I felt bad. You know, if
I get it.
You take the enthusiasm out of Emmanuel, man, you have done something.
We're flying commercial now.
And right.
So a lot of these trips, especially this one, I mean, there was a lot of Jaguar fans that made the trek to Houston.
Yeah.
And for good reason. Look, I mean, it's the first start ever for what you think is going to be the greatest quarterback in franchise history.
You want to say I was there when?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so we go on the plane and, you know, there's just, you know, there's teal everywhere and Jaguar fans everywhere. And it's just like, you could just see the collective sigh. They're like, Jeff, what happened?
Old Jags. That's you know, and yet you don't want that to be the feeling. So, you know, that's why I talk about this game was so important because it's one of the more gettable games, at least you would think, you know, on paper heading into it when you look at the schedule. And now, you know, Denver, pretty good team.
Sure,
In here this Sunday. And
The dumpster fire component to the Houston Texans game just gave you more confidence.
Yes. Yes,
you know,
and you just look and you break down, like, you felt like, all right, Tyrod Taylor's been around the block, but I like our quarterback here.
Yeah.
You look at, like, all right, Brandon Cooks is a good receiver. What else do they have? Well, apparently they didn't need much else.
He should at least be more organized than Houston.
Their running back room is a bunch of retreads,
yeah,
you know, that were once really good, but have kind of fallen off a little bit. Yeah, we got a lot to get into with Jeff Lagerman today. 641-1010 on those phone lines and on the text line. Hit us up on Twitter with your questions as well. You're listening to Jaguars Today on a Check the Tape Tuesday on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Self-inflicted errors on offense were crucial, with 9 penalties on offense, which is unheard of and absolutely unacceptable. Alignment issues, that I don't know what that is. That's just lack of discipline, lack of focus. You're lined up off the ball, and then the receiver covered up someone once, and then a couple holding penalties. So we'll evaluate everything.
This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Lack of focus on the first drive of the season.
Mm-hmm.
What in the world? First drive of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Just mind-boggling, honestly.
Yeah, one of the things I think that is I've always – And I asked the question to Urban last week as part of – I can't remember if it was pregame radio interview or part of the Urban Meyer show, which is tonight, by the way.
New night.
And so I'd asked him, I said, you know, how do you manage – because a lot of times when you go into the first game, and it doesn't matter whether it's Little League or it's high school or it's college or it's pro, man, you get amped. I mean, you feel like E, you know? I mean,
somebody say something?
You know? You feel that stuff, but I mean, it's you kind of have to kind of take a step back and harness it a little bit, you know, sometimes, because otherwise you kind of get out of sorts.
Yeah.
And so they looked, I mean, so I always expect the first game and the first series or the first series for each side of the ball to kind of make it maybe look a little bit, you know, kind of out of sorts. But I've always believed, and especially the first game, you kind of come out and you play a little bit conservative. When I say conservative on offense, maybe run the ball. Let the nerves kind of play out a little bit. You know, and if you're going to ask the quarterback to throw it, make sure it's short, because otherwise he's throwing a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and it's, you know, instead of being a major league distance to the home plate, it's like Little League. You know, it's like, wow. You know, so it's kind of sometimes easy to kind of gradually work your way into it with all the emotion, and they came out throwing the ball right away. I was kind of surprised at that. And then defensively, they were doing a lot of different substitutions with personnel early on, you know, which was kind of surprising, because in a first game, you really don't know what you're going to see. I think defensively, they knew what the Texans were going to be, but offensively, you're not sure exactly what their tempo is, their personnel groupings are going to be. So sometimes you might want to be a little bit more vanilla just to kind of get a feel for things. But they were coming out of the gate and being pretty aggressive. So if they could have a do-over, maybe they would do things differently.
Well, I do want to get to the O-line, but I think this ties in with what you're talking about. Like, watching last night, you know, you watch the Jags game a little differently. And, again, Tony and I hear it before we see it, right? So we know basically on the call what's coming here on the TV delay. But watching Derek Carr last night, I thought with the atmosphere, first time they had fans in that stadium in Vegas, he came out and he was sailing the ball high for a lot of the first half, right? Now, he settled down. He threw for over 400 yards.
Sure.
He had a great game overall, but I felt like he was too amped up in the first half. So I had this question from Paul Farrell on Twitter. He said, Trevor seemed to have some high throws. Was he rushed on those throws, Logs, or did he progress through his reads well and just miss high? What did you see on the film?
I think he just missed some things, and I think that might have been first game. You know, he was asked in the broadcast meeting about, you know, what his expectations were and was he nervous. He said, yeah. He goes, you know, this is my first game in the NFL. And so he said, look, it's a little exciting, you know. So, I mean, there are going to be some, you know, nerves and butterflies. I mean, even Trevor Lawrence, you know, I mean, a guy that's played a national championship when he was a freshman. So it doesn't surprise me that maybe he had some balls that were off the mark, you know, pressing a little bit, trying to make some things happen too much. I thought they should have done a little bit better job of, and I think we had talked about this earlier and certainly have talked about on some of the different broadcasts that we had in the preseasons that, you know, the Chargers last year and Anthony Lynn and their offensive coaches, I thought, did a really good job of managing Justin Herbert. And you guys would probably agree with that. I mean, he had a fantastic year.
Outstanding.
And there was a lot of situations that the Chargers were in offensively when he was the quarterback early on when his first couple starts. And it was what you would consider maybe an obvious passing down, you know, second and 12 or, you know, a first and 15, you know, after a penalty. And they didn't throw it. You know, they would choose to hand the ball off. And I think that's what I consider to be managing – the quarterback, which means you're trying to take some pressure off of him and not expecting him to have to do all of it. And I thought that they put a little bit – and look, he's a first overall pick. I get it. But I still think you got to do a little bit better job of managing that position, especially early on until he, you know, he proves, you know, you visually are starting to see that he can handle some of that stuff. And I thought that could have been done better because in the game – and I don't know what the numbers are, but there were some, you know, penalties, and then there were some plays that they had that were like second and eight, second and nine. All of a sudden, they're coming out and wanting to throw the ball. And I'm like, well, you know, let's run the ball, you know, especially because if you looked at the run pass ratio early in that game, it was a little skewed, you know,
slanted
heavily towards the pass, and that was a little surprising.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's do this because we could talk O line for the rest of the show if we wanted to, but let me go player by player. Just give me a two or three word description.
Well, I'll give you the two best players. Start something good here.
Okay.
I thought Norwell was outstanding. I mean, really.
Okay.
He was outstanding. I thought Linder, besides the hold, which look, that's got to be cleaned up with Linder. That's how he gets holding calls. He takes his hands and he puts them outside, and he's good enough. He doesn't need that. The guys that typically take their hands and put it outside the shoulders, they're trying to control a guy's movement because their feet aren't good enough to be able to handle movement. Well, Brandon's feet are good enough to handle movement. He needs to get them back inside. But I thought those two were really good. And then I thought the tackles were – they had moments. You know, moments that were good, moments that were bad, beat a couple times flat out, okay? A.J. Can, I don't know what happened. And, look, I love A.J. He's probably been – besides Linder and Norwell, the last couple years has been the next best player. And in this game, he had a tough outing. I mean, really tough outing. I mean, I've never seen AJ have a game like this. And I don't know why. I know that he was on the COVID list not long ago. Did that have something to do with it? I mean, I don't know. I just know that performance – was not good, and it was at the level that I think if you're a coach, you want to know why, and your job as a coach is to make a team better, and one of the things that you probably would look at is that, look, if that's going to happen again, we're going to put somebody else in there. I mean, that's the nature of the game. I mean, you got to play at a better level than what AJ played at.
Here was Urban Meyer, cut 7E. On this one here, on why Walker Little was inactive for this game?
A lot of time on Walker. Well, you know, you just, I think it's eight linemen. And we just felt like Jay Richardson, Will has been more consistent than Walker right now.
All right. I bring this up for that. I feel like Urban Meyer delegates a lot of stuff, right? And like, head coaches probably have to delegate a lot of stuff, right? But like, the whole conversation between how many reps Trevor Lawrence is getting versus Minshew, well, I'm going to sit down and talk with Bevel and Schottenheimer about this. Like, ultimately, you're the head coach. You've gotten quarterbacks prepared. Now, granted, not for an NFL season, but it's surprising to me that you're down to 53 guys now. And should I be surprised that he's not quite sure what the name of one of his top eight offensive linemen is at this point? Is that
The one thing I will say is that as a coach, because I've been friends with a lot of coaches through the years, and I'm willing to give Urban a pass on this one. The reason why is that some coaches, when they take a loss like that, they don't sleep very well, for one. Mm-hmm. And then when they get back to the city, first of all, after the game, get on the plane, they get the film, they get back to the office, they don't go home, they sleep in the office, they burn the film up, they have meetings all day, and then all of a sudden now you got to go and talk in front of the media. Well, you just got done dealing with, 30 different coaches, and you're looking at the film of, probably, I want to say what the play number was like. It was 160-something plays, and you're trying to evaluate 11 guys on 169 plays or 160-plus plays. I mean, so when I get that, especially on a Monday.
Just curious what your thought was on that. And the only reason I brought that up.
If I'm Will Richardson, though.
Right.
I'm on, coach. My name ain't Jay.
We were talking about, if a guy's playing that badly, that's the reason I brought up, who was the next man up? Probably would have been Richardson in that instance, as opposed to Walker Little. One last thought on this. It's weird. Baxter Hill, who's a big tweeter of the show, a great supporter of the show, sent what he said were the PFF grades on pass blocking, and they've got AJ Cann at 3.4. which is a horrendous grade, obviously, out of 100. I brought him up, and I've got PFF has him at 13.9. So I don't know where Dan this morning was saying PFF had him at 9. So I don't know where all the multiple numbers. Either way, any of those are terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't very good. Like I said,
it doesn't matter. But
very uncharacteristic.
I was just I asked him for the source because I'm that's different than what I'm seeing right now as I brought it up on my phone. But regardless, all right, let's get to a couple of these calls with Jeff Loggeman here on a Check the Tape Tuesday. Let's start with Floyd in Mandarin first up today on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Floyd.
Hey, guys. A question, observation. I'm paying more attention to the line this year because of all the talk, and the camera angle this week really showed the Taylor more so than Cann. But when you're starting, and Jeff, from a former player's, what the real perspective I want, if he is starting way back, I noticed that he was starting way back, as soon as the ball's hiked and he's instantly running backwards, you've already given the defensive end, he's already coming full speed and you're backing up. So I don't see how you're going to ever win that battle if you're not charging forward.
No, from a power standpoint, you're talking about being able to handle of the power of an end? Anyway, is that what you're asking?
Yes, if he's constantly backing up.
Right. I totally get it. And what he's saying, what Floyd is saying is, if Juwan is backing up and kicking when the offensive lineman kick, if he's backing up so quickly, how can he handle the strength of an end? That's just how it is. I mean, you have to protect the outside edge. But the one thing I think that Juwan does sometimes is that he kicks back instead of out. The angle, I think, is sometimes is not where you'd like it to be. And if the angle is a little bit more out instead of back, you can have a little bit more power because some of your angle is actually more going towards the opponent. The one thing that a lot of times offensive tackle likes to go back, if he's anticipating maybe a game and he's going to have to pick up the tackle and the end's going to loop underneath and then the guard takes the end. So a lot of times the tackle, if he sees something in the alignment, they may change their set to where it's back to where they can pick up that game, which is called a TE. But Juwan kind of does that a lot of times anyway, which is I'm not exactly sure why. But you know, the simple fact is that the two tackles, you know, when you get in a game like that was against Houston, that's where we saw that they struggled last year. And they didn't face any dominant pass rushers against the Texans. And I think that Merciless is a good pass rusher. I don't think he's a dominant pass rusher. And he had a couple really good wins, as did a couple of the other Texans guys beating the tackles. This week, I mean, you're getting ready to face a whole different level. I mean, a whole different level.
No doubt. Von Miller and maybe Bradley Chubb.
Maybe Chubb.
All right, let's get Rich on the north side. He wants to put a positive spin on the game from this week. Rich, you're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
We you know, dealt with all the negatives. I mean, we had so many from Sunday, but nobody seemed to mention how good Logan Cook played. Logan Cook had an average of 50 yards a punt, and two of them was pinned inside the 20, and the rest of them was pinned inside the 40 because we were so far back. But Logan Cook played an outstanding game.
He did.
I wanted to give a positive spin on that. That's
You're right about that. And really, in hindsight, should have been the Jaguar Radio Network player of the game, honestly. We gave it to Marvin Jones, but he did average like 49.5 yards. I saw that yesterday.
He's a Pro Bowl caliber punter.
Right. And, but that's the shame of it. When you have to highlight how well your punter
played. You never want to have that be one of the few positives.
It shouldn't be near the top.
The other thing about Logan Cook, which most people don't think of when you think of punter, he is arguably one of the best holders in the National Football League. I mean, literally. I remember talking to Joe DeCamillis many times, and Joe said, look, I'm just telling you right now, anybody that gets to kick with Logan Cook is very fortunate because he is an outstanding holder. I mean, you don't think about that much. I mean, when you think about special teams, about how good of a holder is important or how important it is to the operation of a field goal kicker. Mm-hmm. But Lambeau is very fortunate to have him. The other thing that kind of adds a little bit of a twist to Logan Cook, he's left-handed. And so a left-handed punter can surprise some opponents sometimes because he is left-handed with some fakes.
Okay. Left-footed punter would be
it's weird. He's
more helpful.
He's a lefty arm.
Lefty arm.
But he's a righty kick.
Yeah.
Kind of odd, right?
I would think so. You know, it's like in baseball, the weird combination is lefty thrower, righty hitter.
Yeah.
You don't get that very often.
No.
So, I don't know.
I'm a righty arm, lefty kick.
Lefty kicker?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, my dominant kick leg is my left leg.
What's your dominant eye?
Right, I think. I don't know. I got dominant
eye. You don't know that? You don't know the old trick of putting a piece of paper over one of your eyes? Okay. Okay, here's what you do. Okay, you look at one point far away. Seriously.
Right.
Okay? So you put your eyes at one point far away. Okay, keep looking at it, and take that piece of paper, okay, and cover up one of your eyes.
Right. Do you see the same thing?
Does it, your finger. Put your finger out in front.
Right.
Put it on like a target and move it. Okay? If that finger moves, okay, you got a target off in a distance and a finger in front, okay? Sight it in, sight the gun in, fingertip on the object far away, cover your eye, one of your eyes. If your finger moves, that means that eye is not your dominant eye.
Yeah.
When the finger doesn't move, that's your dominant eye.
All right, we'll be doing this for
you. Didn't know that, did you?
On the break in the Jaguars Today studios. Or what if they neither one of them move? I don't know. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. All right. Either way,
that's an outdoor show thing, by the way.
Either way, strange to throw right and kick left. I believe. I think that's got to be a strange combination. All right, we'll come back. More of your calls. Stay on the line if you're there. Check the tape Tuesday with Jeff Logman. Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
I thought Norwell was outstanding. I mean, really.
Okay.
He was outstanding. I thought Leonard, besides the hold, which, look, that's got to be cleaned up. Well, Brandon's feet are good enough to handle moving. He needs to get him back inside. But I thought those two were really good.
Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
All right. That's Logs on some of the offensive line breakdown. Right eye dominant for me, Tony. What about you?
Left.
Left eye dominant.
Yep.
ET, did you figure it out in there?
Both.
Both I dominate.
No, there's no such thing.
You did it wrong.
Yeah, that's what you think, Logs. Both.
We got to have in a commercial, we got to have a little redo on you.
He's ambidextrous vision guy is what he is. So, Logs, you're a right-eye dominant guy?
I'm a right-eye dominant.
Does that come from shooting somewhat?
I don't know, it's just what you're born.
Mm-hmm. I got, but you know, you but think crazy, you know, if you're a right-hander, aren't you're always closing your left eye and looking down the sight with your right eye?
Well, you're not
eye,
really
right?
supposed to close your eye.
Oh, really?
If you're shooting a rifle, you can close your
eye.
That's
what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm talking with the scope. You know, you're looking down the.
Yeah, a lot of people actually get into trouble because they are left eye dominant, but they're right handed, and they don't realize it. So they actually are shooting right handed, and they're looking down the barrel with their right eye, which is not their dominant eye, and they can't hit anything. And so that's the first thing they actually do for, like, a shooting instructor. They will do an eye test to see what eye is dominant on you to determine whether you need to shoot right-handed or you need to shoot left-handed.
That's funny because you haven't been on much with us until football season, obviously, right? We had the hiatus, and I purchased my first handgun this offseason and went and had, like, a shooting lesson, so sure. to speak, with the guy. And now maybe he tells us I thought I did pretty well. Guy told me it was the best first lesson he'd ever given.
That's good.
I was like plinking that thing from, I don't know, 30, 40 yards away pretty consistently
or whatever it was. If you're doing that with, any 30, 40 feet with a pistol.
I think that's probably really what it was, 40 feet with a pistol. Yeah. But first time out, I was pretty happy.
Now, pistols are challenging. They're lots of fun, though.
That's a pretty satisfying little plink sound it makes when it hits that metal target, man.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
We got people all over Jacksonville that are checking their eyes. They're trying to figure it out.
Don't do it while you're driving.
Yeah, don't do it while you're driving,
just,
people.
Just Google, okay, GTS it, okay, and just say how to determine which eye is dominant, and you can find it on Google.
Or in the rare case of some people,
somebody that's totally clueless, we'll have a tutorial, private tutorial.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Logan in Appleton, Wisconsin, going to check in next on the phone lines here at 641-1010. Good morning, Logan.
Good morning, guys. I am right-eye dominant.
Excellent.
Thank you for that little lesson. So I was wondering, Jeff, so do you think a lot of the issues they had to do on the offensive line had to do with not everybody playing in the preseason? Even though they played together a bunch of years, nobody had any live contact for a long time. And then how did the defensive line really look overall? Sorry, I know I'm doing two. Anyway, I'll take off the air.
No, good questions. And offensive line, did it have to do with not playing together in preseason? I think that always has a little something to do with continuity and performance. When guys work together, they play better together. I mean, that's, you know, the old rule of thumb is that, you know, you practice football to play football to get better at football still applies and will always apply. So, yes, it matters. The defensive line-wise, I thought they got pushed around, which was kind of surprising to me. I can tell you this. Titus Howard is a stud. I mean, he's a man. I mean, he's a guy that last year, 14 starts at right tackle, was a high pick for the Texans, and they all of a sudden move him inside this year to left guard, put him next to Laremy Tunsil. And I was kind of going, wonder why they're doing that. I mean, this is a big man. He's a tackle. At least he was drafted to play tackle. And when you watch the game, you go,
That's why.
And that's why, because he was getting pancakes.
Well, let me ask you, because, you know, just looking at the numbers, and this is why we have you in, right, is we could all look at the numbers and interpret them one way or another. But Ingram, 3.3 per carry, and that was as good as any of the running backs had. They were, like, between 3.1 and 3.3 per carry. Mm-hmm. So if they are getting pushed around, the defensive line, and I'm not doubting you watched the film, how come the numbers were not better than they were for the Texan running backs?
Partly due to circumstances. I mean, think about – excuse me, I had ice in my mouth. But the
– what are you drinking over there, by the way?
It's like Kool-Aid.
All right, looks delicious.
The Texans were essentially, from the entire second half, were running a four-minute offense.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, if you're running a four-minute offense and the opponent knows that you're going to run the ball and they're stacking the box, I mean, to try to stop the run, I mean, you know, you don't expect the numbers to be 4.5 a carry, 4.3 a carry, or 5.0 a carry. They're going to be a little bit lower. But I thought the Texans did, put it this way, their running game was effective. Was it dominant? No. Was it effective? Yes. Did the Jaguars' defensive line get pushed around all the time? No. Did it get pushed around at times? Absolutely.
More than you'd be comfortable with, obviously.
I just thought it would be a little bit better than what it was. And I'm not saying it was terrible. Okay. So it wasn't terrible. I just thought that if you had a winner and you have a loser and you go, okay, who won, the Jaguars defensive line or the Texans offensive line, and you had to declare a winner, the Texans offensive line would be declared the winner. I mean, under Urban's system, you have a winner and a loser.
Winner and loser.
And the Texans, they were the winner there.
We competed everything, Jeff.
So I think that is it concerning that that the Texans won that matchup? No. I think that the Jaguars defensive line will be better, and I expect them to be better. The one guy that I was kind of surprised that didn't play better, because he's a guy that I thought was outstanding and I was looking forward to watching, I thought Devon Hamilton should have played better.
Okay.
I thought Malcolm Brown was pretty stout. I thought Roy Robertson Harris was pretty stout. He had a couple moments where he got knocked off the ball, I think one time like 4 or 5 yards. But Devon Hamilton got knocked back more than I thought he should. And he's a guy that, you know, we were all thinking, okay, he's going to be taking that next step.
Yeah, a lot of hype about him coming out of this offseason.
He's got a ways to go.
Let's get Ken on the West Side next up on a Check the Tape Tuesday. Good morning, Ken.
Hey, how you doing, Mike, Jeff? I'm right-eyed Dominic, and I learned it by shooting pool.
Okay.
But Mike and Jeff,
and Tony.
Two quick questions. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Hey, what I wanted to find out is Urban Meyer, do you think those are mistakes as far as the legal procedures are easily correctable? And then the second one is, why didn't Trevor Lawrence run more? You know, because that's part of his game.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great question, especially the second one. Are the illegal formations, I think is what you meant, are they correctable? Absolutely. I mean, that's just lined up properly. We got to get it right, and I think that will be fixed, and I would be surprised if that is an issue this week. The second part of the question, I think, can be a really interesting discussion, is that we're surprised, why not have Trevor Lawrence run the ball more? You know, at Clemson, he ran the ball like 300 or 231 times. That's a lot. And were they all designed rushes? No. A lot of them were scrambles, but there were quite a few of them that were, read option type plays, to where they utilized his legs to be a threat, because to run the read option effectively, the quarterback has to be a legitimate threat, and he does have to run the ball at times. I think the Jaguars are committed to making sure of two things. One, that Trevor Lawrence stays healthy. And how do you accomplish that? You don't call runs, and you don't have him do stupid things out of the pocket.
What do you think that they said? Like, be very selective on, right? Like, don't do it. Like, they're trying to.
I found it interesting. If you go back, and there was a question that was posed to Urban Meyer about Trevor Lawrence
last
running,
week, right?
I think it was.
Yes.
And he referred to, hey, look, we're trying to. He said, I think he said two things. One, our goal is to keep him healthy, and then also to help him have success. And then he made some kind of comment like, I'd have to answer to the owner if I start running
him
a bunch of times.
He said something about you don't put the number one overall pick quarterback in that position, something along those
lines.
Something
along the lines, I'd have to answer to the owner.
Yeah.
And is that the right approach? Absolutely. I mean, because you had, for example, RG3. Okay. RG3, they cut him loose and he was, a threat. And Lamar Jackson, cut him loose. He was a threat. Josh Allen, cut him loose, to some extent, but most of the stuff that he did was, or he just kind of took off on his own. There wasn't a whole lot of design to it. And is it a way to soften the break-in period a little bit, maybe to have some success because we're taking advantage of the mobility of the quarterback until he learns to be able to function in the pocket at a higher level? Absolutely. But you're also risking the health of your quarterback to where, okay, we want to get to point B, but if all of a sudden we have an issue along the way, we ain't getting to point B because right. quarterback jacked up. So I think it's smart to limit his exposure by having very few, if any, kind of running plays called, because he's going to have enough exposure as it is.
Sure.
Running on his own when he's trying to run for a first down on a scramble or something, a bootleg or whatever.
I'd like to see, and hopefully we get to see it soon,
how they call it with Trevor Lawrence when they're in a tight game in the fourth quarter, and is that when you let him go a little bit more and you start running him? But like in Sunday's game, why would you do it?
Yeah.
You know, like there's no point to exposing him to any of that. You weren't going to win the game.
You got to be smart. I mean, he looked all quarterbacks, whether they start out as mobile quarterbacks or not, they all have to be able to function from the pocket. And the ones that do have great mobility, when the legs start to slow down, and Lamar Jackson and Michael Vick are probably two exceptions where they never really slowed down, but they were exceptional runners. You know, they all eventually end up in the pocket as passers. That's where you have to make your living at. And we put the ball in the hands of the people that are bigger, stronger, faster than you. And now Michael Vick and Lamar Jackson, and they are bigger, stronger, faster than some of the other people. But is Trevor Lawrence that or Peyton Manning?
He's a mobile guy, but he's not Lamar Jackson.
He's not.
I mean, Lamar Jackson to not run Lamar Jackson would be criminal. I mean,
that's part of his game.
It's a huge part of his game that makes him as effective as he can be as a passer. I mean, his first year when he won that MVP, he led the league in passing TDs, in large part because the threat that run gives you.
Sure.
Everyone's freezing at the mesh point. All right.
Just one point about Trevor Lawrence. There were so many things that were negative, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about that because, you know, a lot of people have a tendency just to focus in on the three interceptions and there was almost a fourth. But there were so many good things with his play that gives me encouragement for the future.
All right, we will get to that and more of your calls, and I just have a stack of them on Twitter questions for you, Jeff, that we'll try to get rapid fire in hour number two coming up as well. Tony Smith will take us around the league when we return. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Jeff Loggeman, and E.T., it's a Check the Tape Tuesday. Jaguars Today rolls on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, gems around the NFL, brought to you by Beaches Jewelry and Pawn in Jack's Beach.
Washington football team quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick will miss 6 to 8 weeks after suffering a hip injury on Sunday against the L.A. Chargers. Taylor Heinicke will get the start for them this Thursday night against the New York Giants. San Francisco head coach Kyle Shanahan said yesterday that running back Raheem Mostert has chipped cartilage in his knee, is expected to be out for 8 weeks. Seattle running back Rashad Penny re-aggravated a calf injury this weekend and is expected to miss a couple of weeks while he recovers. New York Jets left tackle Mekhi Becton will miss 4 to 6 weeks after undergoing surgery to repair damaged cartilage that he suffered on Sunday. Denver wide receiver Jerry Jeudy is expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain, which would obviously rule him out for this Sunday here in Jacksonville. San Francisco is signing cornerback Dre Kirkpatrick. The 49ers are placing Jason Verrett on injured reserve with an ACL injury. The New Orleans Saints are signing free agent wide receiver Kenny Stills. The Saints also worked out former Jaguars wide receiver Marquise Lee before signing Stills. Dallas has activated right guard Zach Martin from their reserve/COVID list, so he will be available for the Cowboys in week 2.
Thank you, Tony. There you go. Around the National Football League. Logs, you wanted to get in with some positivity from Trevor Lawrence's debut, so the floor is yours.
the interceptions we'll talk about at some point, but the way he handled himself in the pocket, what did he end up with? One sack, I think, in
the
game with an offensive line that, you know, we knew or talked about the grade that right guard A.J. Can had. The tackles had some struggles at times. The way he operates in the pocket and the pocket presence that he has while keeping his eyes down the field, I think, is really strong. And that's something that, you know, you used to hear me kind of get mad about Minshew, that he sometimes would just drop the eyes and just take off. And then, you know, you can never see the field and you can't operate within the design of the offense that way. But Trevor's eyes always stay down the field. He manipulates in the pocket to make his offensive line better. That's something that we talked about, Mike and Tony, here before the Dallas preseason game, you know, making that debate, should we play him or should we not? And I said that, look, you know, the good quarterbacks help protect themselves, and he can clearly do that. The issues with some of the inaccuracies, I think that's going to be fixable. That will come with experience, having the nerves calm down and everything else. And most importantly, he never got flustered, it seemed like, throughout the game, even though that the performance wasn't great. And then, Mike, what you alluded to after the game press conference, how he handled himself, I mean, that's what great leaders do. You're talking about a young man that was elected a captain. And I don't ever remember, and I've never been around, a rookie quarterback that's been elected a captain. It just doesn't happen. It's not given to you. It's not like something that Urban Meyer and the staff manufactured. I mean, that's earned. And so these are all strong things about him because you know he's a young quarterback and there will be bumps in the road, but the signs that you see, the arm strength, the accuracy, the pocket mobility, and the pocket mobility to keep the eyes down the field, these are all signs that this is going to be a really good one.
All right, let's hope that's the case and it continues. Let's go to the phone lines and see if we can clear these three calls right here because I got a lot of Twitter questions I want to get to, Jeff, but we'll start with Jack in St. Augustine next up. Hi, Jack.
Hello, how are you?
We're well, how are you?
Good. I guess the biggest two questions that I would like to comment, hear comments on is how well did the wide receivers run their routes? It looked like at least one of those interceptions was because one of the wide receivers ran the wrong route. And are you concerned about the drops? It seems like that's a carryover from last year. And I thought the clock management was a terrible issue at the end of the first half. And I, by the coaching staff, how they managed that. I like, if you don't mind, those are the things I'd be interested in hearing you.
I don't think there was an issue with clock management.
Well, they went three and out with 11 seconds, in, you know, which left the Texans. Like, sure. I think the question is after you go incomplete.
Right.
Do you run the ball down. And try to say, you know what, let's make sure they don't put any points on the board here at the end.
At that point,
I
will say the Texans still had three timeouts left.
Yeah, and I would say, too, don't give up a 50-yard bomb.
Yeah, that's right. That would
the
help
issue there,
not so much the clock management.
Can we win on one of those, Jeff? Just one
so
in the game?
What about the route running? I think he's probably referring to the LaVisca one. He thought, I think LaVisca was going to come underneath Kirksey, and he went behind him.
Yeah, and that's where the interception to the linebacker that's thrown right to him.
Right.
Like, whoa, what happened there? I mean, that's clearly a miscommunication, whether it's wide receiver, quarterback, I don't know. I mean, you have to actually have the design of the play to know exactly that. But the other interceptions, the one where he's rolling out to his left and he kind of throws back to the middle of the field, I mean, that's kind of quarterback 101. And can guys make that throw? Yeah, Patrick Mahomes can do that. And Trevor Lawrence, I'm sure, can do that at some point, but not in the first game. You know, you want to kind of let him kind of get his feet underneath of him as a pro first. And so, but I think eventually I see him making a throw like that. But early in the career, you'd like to discourage him from trying to do that. The Cargraves interception, it was essentially a Lovie Smith, which is exactly what you expected, a cover two defense. And you had a route that was in front of the safety. So what you're trying to do is hit that soft spot between the corner and the safety. The safety has the deep half of the field. The corner has the flat. And then you had James Robinson. J-Rob was in the flat, essentially running kind of like a little out route. Well, Hargraves, being the veteran that he is, said, you know what, if they want to throw it to J-Rob underneath, let them throw it. I'll react up. I'm just going to keep my eyes on the quarterback, and I'm thinking he's going to probably try to throw this a little throw into the soft spot of cover two. And so he just sat there and he was just waiting and looking. And as soon as that quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, started to throw the motion, he was taking off and he was anticipating it. And Trevor Lawrence shouldn't have made that throw. I mean, that's what you were expecting. It's Lovie Smith cover two. And the proper throw there would have been to throw it to James Robinson and let him have some one-on-one time with Vernon Hargraves.
James is in jail. He was on detention this game for some reason. I don't know. I'm kidding. But,
yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like with it. You a little bit on that, and that James Robinson's their best running back. And look, I'm okay if you're splitting time and trying to rest James Robinson. If he's toting the rock
right
40 times a game, you know.
But, I didn't even have a problem with Hyde because Hyde performed when he got the ball.
He
averaged 5 yards a carry. He was running well. It was just the overall lack of touches for those guys.
But you got to give them the ball more.
Quickly, because we got a lot to get to here. The drops from wide receivers.
Not acceptable. I mean, some of it was ball location, but some of them, look, the ball's not going to be perfect all the time. And I said this during the broadcast, catch the damn ball. You know, the one to DJ Chark that he dropped early in the ball game. What was wrong with that? You know, catch the ball.
Understood. All right, Kyrie in Norfolk up next here on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, Kyrie.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to say, first off, before I get to it, Jeff, man, I love when you're on the
Check the Tape Tuesdays. I just feel more educated every time I hear you speak on football. Also, Jeff, I would like for you to speak on, like, did you think the coaching staff do Trevor Lawrence any favors? Because I felt like, even though I felt like he was poised in the pocket, I didn't see him look shaky or weary, but having him throw 51 times in a ball game, that's kind of not fair to a rookie in his first start. Yeah, that's it. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Kyrie. And by the way, Sandbridge Beach, not far from you there in Norfolk, is one of the prettiest beaches in the whole state of Virginia. Check it out if you haven't. Anyway, so the coaching staff. Look, I think they've assembled some really, really good offensive minds, and I think having the support system there for a quarterback and by hiring Bevel and Schottenheimer, I think was absolute brilliance because you've got two guys now. Are they perfect? You know, was Darrell Bevel a perfect play caller? Are there things that I just think that he was mistake free in the game? No, but I like those two guys because I think they're very strong. Can they be better? Absolutely. But I think that there's the foundation, and the one thing I think that you hope is that you keep that in place for Trevor Lawrence's growth, because the last thing you want to do is have a guy all of a sudden leave, take an advanced job or maybe take a job as a head coach, and now you lose that consistency with your quarterback.
Are we going to get a course correction on the running game this week to slow down that pass rush? Are we going to get 25-plus carries?
And to manage the quarterback like I talked about.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see that this week. And, I mean, anytime you have 51 throws in a game, I don't care what the score is, 51 throws is too much.
My timeline has had a lot of, I don't know about you, Tony, a lot of fire Bevel already in it.
Sure.
And I get it.
Well, there was one play that, you know, that happened in the course of the game, and I actually wrote it down. Let me see if I can find it here. But you guys might remember it. It was third quarter. I think the score was they were down by 27 in the third quarter. And it's a first and 10, and you're running a naked bootleg. And if you remember, it was 94 for the Texans, which is Charles Omenihu. Actually almost hit Trevor Lawrence as he turns around, and Trevor Lawrence literally had to just turf it. I mean, he'd, you know, throw the ball on the ground. I'm not sitting there going, wait a minute. You're down by 27. It's in the third quarter, and it's first and 10, and you're running a naked bootleg? I mean, what defensive end on the planet is going to buy that when you haven't really run the ball?
Right. They're going to buy that. Well, they want you to go ahead and
hand
it off.
There's moments like that that, look, I think every armchair quarterback, and look, I can be an armchair quarterback too, that you sit there and you go, that probably wasn't a very good call.
That's what we do, though. We armchair quarterback because we're not standing there getting paid millions of bucks to make those calls in real time. So, you know, when you are, that's what comes. The critique follows, successful or unsuccessful. We'll go to Twitter next, Jeff. I've got a slew of questions. We'll rapid fire, get as many in as we can. Still time for a few phone calls as well at 641-1010. This is Jaguars Today on a Check the Tape Tuesday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You know, we got to make the play. You know, it's just that simple. You know, we all got a job to do, like I preached before. And once those situations come, we just got to make those plays. So it's not just, you know, a team or defensive scheme-wise. It was, you know what I'm saying? It was, you got your name. We got our name called. And if that situation comes up, we got to make the play. And, you know, we miss a lot of those opportunities. But we're going to come back next week and we're going to double up.
That's Josh Allen. Got to make more plays. He may have had the one sack, but there were opportunities. Kalavon Chase on had two opportunities on the same play to get Tyrod. At least.
It was close.
That first
one. He touched him.
You go for the knockout blow, and Tyron's just like, hey, watch it. Like a boxer, he just ducked right under that thing, and then
I sitting there and I watched it, and I was going, man, I've done that before, too. I remember whiffing on Eddie George, unblocked into the backfield, backside, and, you know, just he, I don't know if I closed my eyes or, you know, he does whatever, and he rips off like a 50-yard run that I should have had him for minus two. But
I've seen you make that play, Logs.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, we haven't
you
seen
know? Like with Kalavon, you had some equity built up with the fan base.
I get it. Kalavon. I get it. And I will tell you this. Kalavon's getting better, but he also needs to continue to make the play that's given to him. You know, you had a couple instances, you know, I mean, where he should have made the play. And I get it. And Josh is right. I mean, the preseason, zero takeaways in the preseason. Game one, zero takeaways. Mm. Compare that to the Texans. Texans had, I think, like 10 takeaways in the preseason. In the first game, they get three interceptions.
Yeah.
So, you know, you build and you kind of are what you are. And that's something that we all kind of talked about and thought that this would be kind of an issue for this defense, and that we felt like they were going to be pretty good against the run, and that getting to the passer and takeaways and things of that nature might be an issue. But the only way that they could help themselves is being really good against the run. Well, they weren't really good against the run against the Texans. They were just okay. And to be better as a defense, especially with the personnel that they have, without having a dominant inside pass rusher, having some guys on the edge that are unproven, you've got to be third and nine, third and seven, you know, as much as you possibly can.
All right, let's go try to go through these as quickly as possible to pay off some of the people who are sending in questions via social media logs. Start with this one. Is that one of the most sloppy tackling games you've seen since you've been broadcasting?
No.
Not.
I've seen worse.
Okay.
I've seen much worse.
Besides Cisco over Wingard, can you see any changes to the starting lineup on either side of the ball? And they did say, by the way, this is cut six there from Urban, E.T. This is Urban Meyer yesterday talking about Andre Cisco.
Cisco is really coming on. You know, he's the guy that we were told when we drafted him, you know, we really thought highly of him, we still do, is that he had that ACL, so he still, you know, was a little bit on a pitch count during training camp. Cisco's a guy that we believe has a great future here.
So basically, I think they're saying we don't want to overwork him. You know, he's not even a year removed from the ACL tear. But
yeah, taking it slow.
What did you see from Wingard on film?
I thought that it wasn't great. He got beat for that one pass by the tight end, and it was what a great play by Tyrod Taylor. You got Rayshon Jenkins bearing in on the blitz, and all of a sudden Tyrod turns around and literally lofts it up into the air, and Pharaoh Brown makes a one-handed catch, which, you know, give him credit, okay, great play by the quarterback, great play by the tight end, and Wingard had the coverage on Pharaoh Brown, but you sit there and you go, okay, how could it have been better? Well, at the beginning of the play, Wingard actually gets out of position by shuffling because he was a little confused on who to cover, whether it be one tight end or the other. And so he got a delayed start out of the gate back at the line of scrimmage. If he didn't have that, then there's not that little bit of separation between him and Pharaoh Brown. Maybe he can contest the catch or at least be on him as he's trying to catch it one-handed and he doesn't bring it in. You know, so, and then, you know, open field missed tackle when he was in the hole, which, you know, as a defensive coordinator, you're drawn up to have an unblocked defender to make a tackle when you overload the box, and he was that guy, and he doesn't make the play. That was disappointing. A couple coverage issues that you'd like to have seen him be able to help out, and I wasn't able to do that. I mean, if it were me, I thought that they were going to keep Jared on Wilson, the final roster, and they didn't. I thought that Jared was a much better option to allow time for Cisco to be that starter. And I think, in my opinion, it's only my opinion, I think Daniel Thomas will be a better special teams player than Andrew Wingard. They obviously felt different and that Wingard, you know, could kind of allow Cisco time to be ready to go full speed in a full game. But I think Cisco may play more and more and more here pretty soon.
This was Urban yesterday, brief comment about Wingard.
Wingard was the most consistent throughout. Missed a tackle, had a chance to make a couple plays. He just, you know, we're not throwing anybody under the bus yet.
I love that. Yet.
But he said he was the most consistent safety throughout, you know, like acknowledged a couple bad plays. Does that jibe with your film analysis?
Was consistent throughout the game?
Yes.
It was okay. But when you give up a couple plays, that's kind of the ultimate grade. So
I got you.
I wouldn't say that he was the most
well. How is Rayshon Jenkins?
He's got to make that play on that first contested ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, and when you come in and you got Tyson Campbell in man coverage, but he's chasing a guy all the way across the field. And so when the quarterback launches the ball, when you come in, there has to be one thing. The receiver doesn't catch it, okay? And so when you come in, you're coming in violent. I mean, literally like throwing arms and body and everything, and it was kind of more of a coming in, maybe trying to make the interception. When you have the better positioning, you can go ahead and try to make the interception. But when you don't, you got to come in like a ball of fury. And I thought he missed that opportunity.
All right, this one, see if you agree with this. Big Will said it appeared Marvin Jones was really protecting his shoulder while catching the ball and how he fell on the ground. Do you think they should sit him, or is his injury something that will take a whole off season to fix? He had the AC joint issue. Did that jump out at you watching the film? Did he look like a guy trying to protect that?
No, I actually thought that he got a different injury early in the ball game. You know, he had the shoulder that was an issue in the preseason, and it looked like there was maybe a hand issue or something, hand, wrist, or something in the game, unless that was maybe just an issue from the shoulder going radiating mm-hmm. down his arm. I don't know the answer to that. But, no, he look, injuries happen, guys play hurt, and he will continue to do that.
All right. Let's see. Do you feel that this is a one-off game where the team can adjust to a bunch of formations, et cetera, or are you concerned that the defense is going to continue to struggle with that, and will that be an issue? We also had a question about pick plays, and you know, the which kind of all is part of the same mix here. You know, how can they do a better job defending against some of those pick plays, some of those bunch formations and man coverage?
Well, I don't think that there was any particular play that was an issue. The biggest problem was is that, you know, you go into this game and you know what the game plan is. It's very, very clear cut as a defense. I mean, put all your energy on stopping a team that has five running backs on the roster. You know what they're going to do, run the ball and make them a one-dimensional team. You weren't able to do that. Okay, when you get the opportunity and you do have the Texans in a – obvious passing situation, contain the quarterback, keep him into the pocket. Did you do that? No. Okay, so the first two objectives was completely negate the Texans' running game. Did okay, but did you completely negate it? No. Okay, with the quarterback, did you keep him in the pocket? No, that was one of the biggest problems that you had in the game mm-hmm. was him getting out. And then it was just your mistakes that cost you. Give you an example. Early in the game on the first drive, you had a 3rd-and-3. And you had Rudy Ford out on the field, okay? And he's like your dime linebacker, and you've got a situation where, again, the defense, when they looked a little bit out of sorts and getting late lined up and communicating the signal of everything, they're lining up, and Rudy Ford all of a sudden is turning around, talking back to the linebacker and the safety for something. Well, the ball snapped, and he doesn't know it because he's trying to get the call and get the communication. And, well, the guy that he's covering runs right to the flat, and it's an easy completion. Convert the third down, they move the sticks. That was on the first Texans touchdown drive. I mean, you could have ended the drive right there if you've got a guy who's locked in, ready to go, and looking at the guy that he's supposed to cover. And because he's turning around, looking back, trying to talk to somebody on the defense because they're trying to get organized. I mean, you know, you gave up a play.
This is, quote, I'm going to use the air quotes, fixable, right? But I said this yesterday, Logs. I've heard this for as long as I've been covering this team, it seems like. Oh, we beat ourselves. All these mistakes are correctable. Well, correct the damn mistakes. Like, why then do these process errors seem to show up for this team a lot more than other teams, even though there's basically a brand-new coaching staff and a lot of new players? Why does it feel like there's a lot of the same issues that have plagued the Jags?
Well, I mean, it's frustrating. And look, I get it, you know, and hopefully this all becomes kind of an afterthought, you know, when we get the next week and you get – clean alignments, and you get clear communication and organization, and you hope that this is just, you know, hey, first game, you know, a lot of new players, new staff, you know, and but, you know, again, when we brought this up, and everybody's brought this up, I mean, the Texans also had a whole lot of new faces as well. I mean, the Jaguars had 22, but guess what? The Texans had more than that. They had 32.
Right.
So they had 11 more new faces. So, I mean, I totally get it. I mean, I totally get some of the frustration and, you know, and if I was a player, I'd be very frustrated right now. And it's a matter of here's the reality. You got an opportunity to fix it, and you've got a limited amount of time to clean it up, and you better have a very clear focus.
All right. We will come back. If you're on the line, stay there, and we will get those phone calls in on the other side. Maybe hit a couple more on social media, get some final thoughts with Jeff Logman on a Check the Tape Tuesday, and then we'll burn the tape. And we'll get ready for the Denver Broncos to come to town for the home opener for the Jags. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
You know, it wasn't terrible, but it certainly wasn't good. And I'll say this. I think the thing that probably was worse than watching the tape was the things that you saw before the tape actually starts recording.
Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Not much good coming out of the opener. We'll get to Log's preview of what's to come with Denver coming to town. Coming up here in a minute or two, we got three on the line. Let's see if we can knock them out quickly. No, none of these I've got 16 questions I need answered. One, keep it a one thing here if you possibly can so we can get through this. Mandel in Pittsburgh is next up. Mandel, thanks for the call. You're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, man? How y'all doing?
We're good. What's up?
All right, so my question is on three of the interceptions that Trevor Lawrence threw, to me it looked like James Robinson was there on all the checkdowns. Am I seeing that right? I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the one to Hargraves, he was certainly there available for the checkdown, but the other ones, I don't remember if he was open or not. But there were options, definitely, on the interceptions for the quarterback.
All right, thank you, Mandel. Ben at the beach is next up here on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, Ben.
Hey, what's up, guys? I just wanted to ask, I noticed that Trevor Lawrence and Derek Carr had a similar stat line with Carr going, was it 34 out of 56, and Trevor going 28 out of 51. I'm curious, if Trevor would have won the game, do you think they would be singing praise like they are doing for Vegas, or would they still be complaining that he's passing too much? Just curious.
I mean, you always get more praise when you win, but the reality is that the performance wasn't great. I mean, when you throw three interceptions, I mean, the most bothersome thing is that you have 51 attempts.
Right, that's the thing. Carr had one pick, and it went right through his receiver's hands. Would have been the game-winning touchdown.
Right.
And, I mean, literally went right through his hands. So,
yeah.
Carr didn't put the ball in danger nearly as much
as
Trevor
Lawrence
did.
No, he threw three touchdowns, essentially, in overtime, and one of them counted.
Yeah, I mean, the narrative would have been like if somehow they had overcome it, it would have been like perseverance wasn't the best outing you'll ever see out of him, but he showed the talent. Yeah,
if he won that game somehow,
yes,
you still would have said, man, he's got a long way to
he's
go.
He's got a long way to go, yeah. but you would have highlighted more about, oh, these are the good things that he did.
And gutted it out, yeah.
And if he had won, he would have had to do more than he did because clearly he did all he did and they came up significantly short still.
Yep.
And we still pointed out the things that were good that he did because
no doubt.
We do.
Darren in Mandarin. Go ahead, Darren.
Hey, good morning, guys. Dude, that was a long two-hour flight back from Houston, I can tell you that. hey, Logs, do you think Walker Little's going to be activated this week? And I don't know if that puts any pressure on the other guys to look over their shoulder or not, but Dempsey, you stole my thunder a while ago. It's like my dad always said, if a frog had wings. I'm just tired of the ifs, man. If they hadn't got the penalty, if they had caught the ball, I mean, clean this crap up, man. It can be fixed, but you got to do it. But I just wondered about the activation of other players.
Yeah, good question. And I don't think that Walker Little right now is playing better than Cam Robinson. I think Walker Little still has a ways to go with his hands and his footwork. He's not ready. He's, you know, and here's the thing. When he's better than one of the other guys, then he needs to play. Right now he's not better than Cam Robinson. I thought Cam was okay. He still had moments. But I thought Cam showed some improvement in his sets. He still had a couple moments, you know, where he got beat, okay? But I thought he did show improvement. He mixed up his sets. His angles were a little bit better. He got beat a couple times. But the reality is he is still better than Walker Little.
Cam Robinson, according to PFF, at least the numbers I'm seeing here on their site, the pass blocking grade for Cam Robinson out of 100 was a 47.
Mm-hmm. Not great.
This week, right?
You know, got beat a couple times.
Juwan Taylor had a 65 out of 100. Which,
same thing. I'd say the same thing equal with both of those guys. You know, he's got to be better as well, but he had moments where he looked good.
All right. Cam also, according to these numbers, gave up 6 pressures, which is a bunch.
Uh-huh.
Brandon Linder did not give up any. Norwell gave up a couple. So did Taylor and Cam.
I don't know where
6.
They say Norwell gave up a couple.
I don't know. Yeah. That's what PFF has. Everybody
yeah,
looks at it differently.
That's a mystery to me.
All right. One more here on the text line before we look ahead, Logs. He said, I heard this. Aaron said Boselli was on with the drill yesterday. He said there were a number of RPO plays, run pass option plays, that Trevor chose to throw. Was he making the right call, or should he have chosen to hand the ball off more?
I did not see any RPO to where he had the ability to choose what to do.
Okay. There you go. That you and Boselli differ on that one. So.
Yeah, we'll fight it out.
Yeah, you should. I can't wait to the pregame this week. So, E.T., fire up that take.
10-10. This 10-10 take is brought to you by Baptist MD Anderson Cancer Center. You're cared for by a team of experts working together on a treatment plan that's just for you.
All right, Logs, in come the Denver Broncos. They'll be down Jerry Jeudy, we find out, who is off to a nice start to his second season here. You've got Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams in the backfield still of Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, KJ Hamler, Teddy Bridgewater, pretty conservative quarterback, doesn't make too many mistakes. Von Miller and the pass rush comes along, though. Maybe Bradley Chubb will be active for the first time. Give us your nutshell synopsis on what the Jags are facing on Sunday.
Well, you got a defense that can be really good with one of the best defensive minds in all of football and Vic Fangio. So that's going to be a huge challenge for a young quarterback, because you're going to see a defense that can show a lot of different looks for a young quarterback, which is not what Trevor Lawrence saw this past weekend with the Lovie Smith-led defense. Offensively, you got a very efficient quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater, and a running back who had 100 yards on, what, like 11 carries? Are you kidding
me?
He
had a huge runaway, breakaway touchdown.
Yeah, had an 80-yard run.
And Jerry Jeudy, missing him is going to be a big issue. But that's the one thing that I think is the reason why they named Teddy Bridgewater the starter, is that he does a really good job of spreading the ball around and completing a high percentage of his passes. Just from that standpoint, that will be a challenge for this Jaguars defense.
All right, 70-yard was the touchdown. But either way, I mean, it was obviously a big breakaway play. So he had 10 carries for 30 yards the rest of the time, Melvin Gordon did. And Javonte Williams, you know, had about an equal number of carries and didn't do a whole lot with them either here. The guy that worries me, it just seems like for years, tight ends have killed the Jags. Farrell Brown did a pretty good job for the Texans this week. I'm worried about Noah Fant. Logs, how do you feel about the Jags' ability to deal with a guy who, let's put him in the top third of tight ends in the league as pass catcher?
Well, I mean, it's good. He's a good young player. No fan is. And is he as good as Farrell Cooper? Many people thought, if you looked at his draft position, many people think Noah Fant was much better.
Correct.
You know, because Farrell Brown has kind of been a journeyman a little bit. So the challenge goes up a little bit this week. You had a little bit of an issue with the tight end this past week. You got, you know, some concerns at safety. What are you going to do there? I think that's going to be something to watch.
Sorry about that. You also have Albert Okwabunam, who had three catches, including a touchdown there. So they got nine receptions out of their 28 completions out of those two tight ends.
Yeah, and Saubert's been around for a while.
He had one as well. So
I mean, these are good tight ends, and Teddy Bridgewater, like I said, he likes high percentage passes, and so the tight end will always be utilized by him.
All right, Check the Tape Tuesday. We'll wrap up here in a moment. Let's say hello to XL Primetime.
Now, the two-minute drill, brought to you by Tire Outlet. Keeping 1010XL rolling with wholesale prices and premium service. Tire Outlet, Jacksonville's largest locally owned automotive repair shop.
All right, Hacker's here. Hello, Hack.
Mike, how you doing?
We're good. What's Tuesday looking like for you guys?
Yeah, obviously, we're going to review a lot of things like you guys did, not only the Jaguars, book around the National Football League, actually hoping to hook up with former Jaguar Brad Meester in the next hour or so, sometime in the noon hour, get Brad's thoughts on how the season went and his expectation moving forward. And then Jacob Copeland, wide receiver for the Florida Gators, scheduled to join us in the 1 o'clock hour. Of course, Florida with a gigantic one on Saturday with Nick Saban and Alabama rolling in.
All right, a lot to talk about, Hack. That's the beauty of this time of year, isn't it?
It's outstanding. Yeah, it's great. And hopefully someday soon we can talk about some more W's instead of ones in the L column.
One W. Let's start there.
One W.
Let's just get one.
We'll take one.
And we'll go from there. So, hey, look, I was telling Tony and Jeff earlier, we're on a break, like, beat Denver and the whole narrative will change for this football team, but I don't have a whole lot of confidence that that's going to happen at the moment based on this past result. So,
I mean, the Jaguars get a little lucky with Jerry Jeudy being out.
Sure.
You know, you still got Cortland Sutton, you still got Noah Fant.
Might get
a lot
lucky with Bradley Chubb not being active. You know, he didn't play in the opener, and
The one that concerns me.
Bradley Chubb.
If Chubb is active,
then you got both. Yeah. It's coming at you from both sides.
Yeah. Who do you put the focus on?
Yep. All right, Hack. Have a good show.
We'll see what happens.
XL
Thanks, guys.
Prime Time coming up next. Logs. Where are we going to catch you the remainder of the week?
Urban Meyer show. Yeah, today. We're moved that to Tuesday. Coach wants to do it on Tuesday for his schedule, and so Tuesday we are going to be at happy hour, I think from 4 to 5, and the Urban Meyer show 5 to 6, and then the rest of the week Thursday got TV Jaguars All Access. But don't forget Wednesday night we're going to be drawing on the in the football lab Trevor Lawrence's first touchdown pass and how he found the zone window. And then on All Access, we will show another touchdown pass, the second touchdown pass, and break that down, how that was actually a zone window as well. And then you talked about how good of a throw that was. Mm-hmm. We'll actually take a look at where the safety was in the corner and how that window got real tight at the end.
It did, right. It got tightened up as the ball arrived. And then
on Jaguars weekend, we're going to put those two football lab plays together. So if you missed it during the week, you'll be able to catch it on Jaguars weekend.
All right, beautiful stuff, man. Looking forward to all that coming your way with Jeff Loggeman, and hopefully better things ahead. Logs, I'll talk to you on the pregame show, if not sooner. So have a good rest of your week.
Thank you, and I need to do a lot of studying for fantasy this week from between now and
Sunday.
Hey, look,
Shadrick, man, we get on his case because he's yet to win one. With 6 years in year seven, he's the only one who hasn't won one of these pregame fantasy pick'ems. And he got off to a great start, though. He is in the lead after 1 week.
This might be his year.
It could be. You know, probably not, but it could be. It could be. It's still possible. All right, that'll do it for us. For Tony Smith, for Jeff Loggeman, and, of course, for E.T., I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks for playing along on a Check the Tape Tuesday. Tomorrow on the program, we're loaded up, as we are every Wednesday, with Donovan Darius, with Denny Thompson, with John Osier. We'll have your midweek injury update and everything else going on around that is pertinent to the Jacksonville Jaguars. That'll do it for us. Jaguars Today, back again tomorrow from 10 to noon on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville.
I appreciate it. Y'all have a great night.